KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. People from across the country, including Indian Country, are checking in on family and friends in Southern California as wildfires devastate Los Angeles. Fires have forced evacuations and have destroyed homes, businesses, and historic sites, which include Will Rogers' historic home. On Wednesday, California State Parks confirmed the loss and released photos of his ranch house and buildings at Will Rogers State Historic Park in Pacific Palisades burned to the ground. A representative for the family of the famous Cherokee actor said in a statement, "While the loss to the ranch is devastating, it pales in comparison to the loss of property and businesses, and more importantly, the lives of those in the surrounding area." The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma, in a statement, said Will Rogers is among their most beloved Cherokees, and the loss is a tragedy. The tribe says its thoughts are with Cherokee Nation citizens living in California and all those affected by the fires. In Canada, there's mixed reaction from Native leaders to the announcement this week by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau that he's stepping down. He's been under pressure to resign for months, both from the opposition and from within his own Liberal Party. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, many Indigenous leaders say while there have been positive steps over the past 10 years, there's still much to do.
Many of Trudeau's critics within the Indigenous community say he's come up short on some important issues, such as clean drinking water on reserves. As of November, there were still 31 long-term drinking water advisories in 29 Native communities. And while some leaders have praised him for his commitment to reconciliation, others say his government's approach has been mainly to talk about the issue. Terry Teagee is a British Columbia regional chief with the Assembly of First Nations.
You know, with reconciliation and policy that was passed over the last 9 years, there certainly was movement. But I think further to that was, you can't just pass policy without the necessary commitments and resources to see it through. And I think that's really where, you know, some of the commitments towards reconciliation didn't live up to its billing.
Some leaders say Trudeau has made progress on increased spending for Indigenous programs. The latest data suggests that Trudeau's government has increased spending in Native communities to more than $30 billion last year from $11 billion in 2016. There was also criticism of Trudeau for his support for pipelines, such as the buying of the Trans Mountain Pipeline in BC, ensuring its further expansion despite opposition from Indigenous groups. Terry Teagee does say, however, that he hopes a new government, if it's led by the Conservatives, is better than the last one under Stephen Harper, which, because of funding cuts and loss of First Nations rights, were probably some of the worst 10 years ever experienced. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Among government offices closed Thursday are tribal departments across the country in honor of President Jimmy Carter as his funeral takes place. The former president is being remembered for his impact on Indian Country, including signing legislation into law involving religious freedom, child welfare, and tribal colleges. Tribal leaders say President Carter was a leader who championed peace and dignity. In Alaska, he's remembered for creating environmental protections and a national monument in Southeast Alaska. He's also remembered for listening to the story from people of Angoon about the bombing of a village. Carter was adopted by Tlingit people in the 1970s. President of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Rosita Worrell, says his most important legacy is continuing to serve as a role model for leadership after his presidency.
He cared for humanity, and he proved it by doing the work himself. That's a trait that we admire.
Worrell says they have a representative attending services in Washington, D.C. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
educators. Ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at NACAinspiredschoolsnetwork.org, who support this show. Sea Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. Sea Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
The company involved brings extensive U.S. and international natural gas and LNG experience to bear to this project.
The Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation names the company preparing to take over the Alaska LNG project. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 9th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, UAF receives funding to harness the potential to develop critical minerals in Alaska.
It's a little bit more than just understanding what the critical minerals are. It's what can we do to get those minerals into the marketplace.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation today named Glen Farm Group LLC as the company it's in talks with to take over the $44 billion Alaska LNG project. The announcement came 3 days after the corporation announced a framework agreement with a company not to be named until an agreement was finalized. Corporation spokesperson Tim Fitzpatrick said today they released the company name, quote, in the interest of transparency. He says the company will announce further developments and public updates at future board meetings and legislative presentations. Glen Farne Energy Transition confirmed an exclusive agreement with AGDC to KDLL today. In a statement, the company said the agreement covers the 800-mile pipeline between the North Slope and South Central, an LNG export facility in Nikiski, and carbon capture infrastructure on the slope. AGDC President Frank Richards teased the then-unnamed company's qualifications during an energy press conference on Monday when it was initially announced that an agreement was in the works.
The company involved brings extensive U.S. and international natural gas and LNG experience to bear to this project.
Glen Farne spokesperson declined to comment on whether the company has any experience with natural gas projects in Alaska. The company also owns and manages the Texas LNG project, a natural gas export facility in South Texas. Glen Farne said it has a second exclusive agreement with NSTAR Natural Gas Company. That agreement is to advance a natural gas import infrastructure in the same facility as the proposed export infrastructure in Nikiski. NSTAR spokesperson Lindsay Hobson said the company's import agreement with Glen Farne is separate from AGDC's Alaska LNG project agreement. The company doesn't have a cost estimate for the import project covered by the agreement. Hobson said NSTAR's import project envisions a land-based design for regasification facilities, meaning it wouldn't include floating gas storage units. She said the project includes a terminal to receive liquefied natural gas tankers and facilities to regas it for NSTAR systems. In a statement provided to KDLL, NSTAR President John Sims called their Glen Farne agreement a, quote, important step in bringing new gas to South Central Alaska. Glen Farne's website says the company was founded in 2011 and develops, owns, and operates energy infrastructure. The company has primary offices in Houston and New York, but has 8 offices around the world. Meanwhile, the University of Alaska Fairbanks is getting $7.5 million from the U.S. Department of Energy to advance the nation's domestic supply of critical minerals. The funding was announced this week and comes after new international export restrictions for the materials. And as Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, people involved with the project say Alaska is an especially promising location for future development.
Grant Bromhall is a science advisor for the Department of Energy, and he's overseeing a $45 million investment in critical mineral development nationwide. He says half the United States' supply of critical minerals, which are essential for many modern technology components, comes from other countries. But he says all but one of the 50 different critical minerals are found in Alaska.
You know, Alaska has incredible natural resources that we're looking to help use to support this need for cleaner, more environmentally friendly materials for our defense and national security and economic and energy security.
So $7.5 million is coming to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, one of a dozen entities across the country to get the funding. The university's Institute of Northern Engineering will use the money to expand its ongoing survey of Alaska mines and start mapping the Pacific Northwest for other critical mineral deposits.
And so this is a chance to evaluate what resources we have inside the U.S. that can be brought, particularly from secondary and unconventional sources, that can be brought in to help supply those crucial supply chains.
The grant will also help sustain UAF research on mine tailings, basically the leftover rock that piles up during mining activity. Some tailings contain bits of critical minerals that could be extracted for industrial use. Brent Sheets is directing the project on the university side. He says they're sending researchers all over the state to test samples for critical minerals. For instance, critical minerals in mine tailings at the Greens Creek mine near Juneau could be worth billions of dollars, according to UAF research. Researchers are also interested in samples from Healy's Usabelli coal mine. But Sheets says the scope of the project is so much larger than just finding out which mines have whatever materials. His lab is also trying to solve some of the huge logistical problems that stand in the way of extracting those minerals. Alaska's size and geological diversity makes it as obstacle-rich as it is opportunity-rich for mineral development. He says the state's remoteness and extreme terrain makes getting critical minerals out of Alaska difficult.
It's a little bit more than just understanding what the critical minerals are. It's what can we do to get those minerals into the marketplace? Because right now, there's no processing that goes on in the United States. That's why Department of Energy has made this a priority. So we take a look at every step in the value chain.
The United States hasn't actively mined antimony, a mineral used in bullets, flame retardants, and solar panels, since 2001. It's also one of the minerals China recently said it would stop exporting to the United States. But there's hope for antimony production in Alaska. This year, an Australian company announced that it's trying to revive antimony mining at the Scrafford mine near Fairbanks.
So antimony is very big right now on the list of minerals, and we're working very closely with Alaska Range Resources down in south central part of the state. But there's antimony right here in the interior, too.
Despite the challenges, Sheets says he's excited that the money will help harness Alaska's critical mineral potential at a time of such dire need, and that it'll position UAF as a central research hub in that development. UAF researchers will speak with communities and tribes across the state about ways to recruit employees and invest in infrastructure to support critical mineral mining projects. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, two Alaskans recall the time they went birdwatching with former President Jimmy Carter.
You're generally trying to be very, very quiet. But here's a man that we didn't want to be quiet with. We wanted to hear his story.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your coverage and saving options and enroll in a plan at healthcare.gov. The help is free, unbiased, and confidential. Language interpretation is available. Call 211 to connect to free local navigator assistance. For coverage starting January 1st, you must enroll by December 15th. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
Lawmakers return to Juneau later this month to begin the first session of the 34th Alaska Legislature. A new bipartisan caucus made up largely of Democrats and Independents will take over the state house, putting it in alignment with the coalition-controlled Senate. But oil prices are down, and Alaska Public Media state government reporter Eric Stone spoke with Alaska Morning News host Ava White about what that could mean for the session.
So, Eric, where do things stand ahead of this session?
Okay, so I'll give you the bottom line up front. There is just less money available for lawmakers to spend. And let me explain that. The Department of Revenue puts out forecasts every spring and every fall. And in the latest forecast, they're revising down some earlier projections for oil prices. So as of the end of 2024, Alaska North Slope crude oil is sitting at about $73 a barrel. That's what they're forecasting it'll be for the rest of the fiscal year. And that is down a lot from recent years. In the fiscal year that ended this past June, North Slope crude ran about $85 a barrel. That's basically due to market forces sort of running against each other. Geopolitical uncertainty is pushing prices up. Think about things like the war in Ukraine or instability in the Middle East. Meanwhile, we're going through an energy transition away from fossil fuels, pushing prices down. You see developed markets like the U.S. leveling off with their oil consumption. Fun fact, the U.S. used less oil in 2023 than it did in 2019. Meanwhile, China's economy is also slowing down, so oil prices are expected to fall to about $70 a barrel for North Slope crude next fiscal year, I should say. That's $4 less than was previously expected. All told, unrestricted oil revenue, that's the oil money that lawmakers can spend however they would like, that's forecast to come in about $1.7 billion in the next fiscal year. And now that is down by more than half from fiscal year 2022. That's when oil prices spiked after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And at this point, the longer-term forecast is a little bit rosier. You know, production is forecast to rise significantly by the mid-2030s as you see things like Willow and Pikka, those big projects, start producing oil. But even still, 10 years from now, total oil revenue is forecast to be down by more than $350 million from where it's at right now. And honestly, that's just the reality in a world that needs less and less oil to function. Drilling is expensive and difficult in the Arctic. It's a lot easier to quickly ramp up production elsewhere. It just comes with less risk.
Okay, so less oil revenue, but of course, oil isn't the only source of state revenue.
Yeah, that's right. So the state also leans on the Alaska Permanent Fund to balance the budget. The state takes 5% of the market value of the Permanent Fund every year and sells it off to use for state services. For the coming year, that's forecast to be $3.8 billion, or more than 60% of the revenues the state will receive. So, I mean, we've seen over the years the Permanent Fund becoming a bigger and bigger source of state revenue. That could set up some pressure on the fund. For now, it's looking like a pretty stable source of funding. Revenue Commissioner Adam Crum says we're now what he calls an endowment state because of our reliance on investment revenues like, you know, a university or college.
Okay, so less oil money, a relatively stable permanent fund revenue. Where does that leave lawmakers?
Well, as I said at the top, there's just less money to go around. There's about $220 million less in revenue than was previously expected for this year, and a similar downward revision for next year. Governor Mike Dunleavy put out his budget. He didn't propose significant cuts to go along with that decline in revenue. His budget would pay nearly $4,000 PFDs, but that would require spending more than half of the primary non-permanent fund savings account the state has. And to do that, that would require a three-quarters majority in both the state House and the state Senate to pass, since that draws on the constitutional budget reserve. And honestly, that's not likely. Democrat-heavy coalitions control both chambers, so you're probably not going to see the governor's budget pass as is. The governor's budget would also leave public schools with roughly $175 million less than they got this year, though Dunleavy says he's also planning to introduce a so-far unbudgeted education bill. So all that leaves very little room for new bills that lawmakers might like to pass and capital spending, things like that. So we can expect some fights and overspending in the budget during the session this year, especially over the PFD, which could be lower this year than it has been in prior years, including last year.
That was state government reporter Eric Stone speaking with Ava White. The federal government may soon lift a penalty that's been freezing funds for some transportation projects in the Fairbanks area over the last year. That penalty was a consequence of the Environmental Protection Agency disapproving of Alaska's plan to improve air quality in the Fairbanks North Star borough. But a notice published in the Federal Register Wednesday says the EPA intends to okay the revised plan, which the state submitted in December. And as KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist reports, that marks a major step toward thawing the funding freeze.
In 2017, the EPA classified portions of the Fairbanks North Star borough as a, quote, serious non-attainment area because air quality was well below federal standards in violation of the Clean Air Act. The EPA then required the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation to amend its State Implementation Plan, or SIP. The amended SIP was supposed to outline how the state would clean up the air and reduce the amount of particulate matter of 2.5 microns or less, also known as PM2.5. But the EPA considered the plan inadequate. So in late 2023, the federal agency partially rejected the plan, which sent the State Conservation Department back to the drawing board. As a penalty, the decision also kickstarted a so-called conformity freeze that limited the way transportation planners could shift around federal funds or change plans for projects within the serious non-attainment area. But now the EPA has signaled through an interim final action that it will grant full approval of the revised plan. The agency says the updated document includes refined regulations on home heating devices and particulate emissions for power plants, among other changes. State officials had expressed optimism in the lead-up to EPA's decision. In December, the Conservation Department's Air Quality Division Director Jason Olds told the Policy Board at Fairbanks Area Surface Transportation Planning that the state had resubmitted the SIP and were hoping for approval within a month.
We're sort of confirming that timeline, but would anticipate that we could see some of those projects move forward for the construction season this coming summer.
The State Air Quality Division didn't respond to a request for additional comment in time for this story. According to Fast Planning Executive Director Jackson Fox, the federally imposed penalty has been locking up about $150 million in total. He says that's affected the timeline for a handful of large projects, such as the addition of an interchange at the intersection of the Steese and Johansson highways.
We're really excited that we can get these going again as soon as the freeze is lifted.
However, the EPA's approval of the state's revised air quality plan does not immediately undo the restrictions. The Federal Register posting starts a public comment period, and Fox says the EPA still has to okay motor vehicle emission budgets submitted by the state. But he expects those hurdles will be cleared and that the funds will soon be unfrozen.
In my mind, it's imminent. We're, you know, a month or more away from getting there.
But that still wouldn't be the end of the road. To avoid future sanctions, the Fairbanks area still needs to meet the bar for PM2.5. Patrice Lee, a coordinator with Citizens for Clean Air, says she's not convinced that's going to happen.
It's doubtful to me that we're going to improve the situation. In 15 years, we cut our pollution in half. We have another half to go.
Data from monitoring sites in Fairbanks tends to hover closer to the air quality attainment level. But 2023 data from the monitoring site in North Pole shows the Hearst Road location was logging double the standard for PM2.5. Wood-fired stoves are often cited as the main culprit for generating the particulate matter in borough air. But Lee says she's discouraged by Interior Alaska's continued reliance on fossil fuels for power generation. And she says while the state plan offers models for improving air quality, those models could prove inaccurate, or regulatory enforcement could come up short.
The state is going to spin it as a big win, and look at it's lifted, which what that means is that they feel like they've skirted any responsibility whatsoever for clean air and our health.
If PM2.5 levels are not rectified, new sanctions that could begin as early as 2027 would go a step further than the current freeze by withholding federal funds from state and local transportation projects. As that possibility looms, Fox, the Fast Planning Executive Director, says his organization will try to get major projects underway as soon as the conformity freeze is no longer holding them up.
We're not out of the woods, but we've got a really good opportunity right now to update our funding plan and get these paused projects back on track and get as much of this construction done as we can over the next couple of years.
In Fairbanks, I'm Patrick Gilchrist.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
A Sitka man is celebrating the 35th anniversary of an Arctic trek that almost defies belief. Beginning in 1989, Keith Nitre did a 10-month solo, unsupported hike across 1,500 miles of Alaska's Brooks Range. Unlike contemporary adventurers, Nitre had no satellite phone or tracking devices and no scheduled airdrops, but he did have a dog, a wolf hybrid named Smoke. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has more.
There are some big walks in North America. The Appalachian Trail comes to mind, as does the Pacific Crest Trail. About 3,000 people a year set out to hike the full length of each of those. Keith Nitre spent 2 years pondering a route that likely no one had ever attempted.
I never knew that the Brooks Range in Arctic Alaska was actually the northern and westernmost extension of the Continental Divide Trail. And I had already been doing several hundred-mile treks across south-central Alaska, going back and forth to my homestead across the Alaska Ranger, working for the Iditarod. And I just wondered if anyone had done it, and that just stuck with me.
Finally, Nitre realized that he had better give it a try. The original plan was to travel with a partner and cover the 1,500 miles in 6 months. But that fell through almost immediately. He traveled to Fort McPherson in Canada's Northwest Territories in the spring of 1989 and began the trip solo. For Nitre, the trip was more about experience than a destination.
I had no airdrops, no radio, no anyone following me. I would only resupply in the villages of Old Crow, Arctic Village, Anaktuvuk Pass, Walker Lake, and Noatak. But in each of those villages, I'd spend a couple of weeks learning about the culture, actually getting ready physically and psychologically to go the next 300 miles.
Even by standards of the day, Nitre was heavily loaded, with a pack topping out at 150 pounds. His dog Smoke, a wolf hybrid who had joined him for many previous extended hikes, also shouldered a load. Progress, though, came very slowly.
The first day leaving a village, I'd stumble like maybe a mile and a half from the village because 150-pound pack is pretty heavy. And then I'd have a really good meal and eat, you know, a couple of pounds, and my dog would eat 2 pounds, you know. And then the next day, I'd stumble 3 miles. By the time I got down to where my pack was, you know, 100 pounds or so, I'm already 30 miles into the journey. I got a leg up. Now I'm psyched into it, and I can go. And then the other thing is my dog, as smart as he was, he never figured out his pack always weighed 40 pounds.
Nitre says there were many highs and lows on the trip. The highs mostly involved connecting with the residents of the indigenous communities along the route who supported him. The lows were the things you might expect, encounters with bears and other hazards of the wild. But sometimes nature delivered an unexpected high.
I walked with 10,000 caribou one day, and they were coming down a valley, and I was going up it. So I just stopped, and I became a human rock in a river of caribou as they float around me.
Nitre expected to paddle most of the last 300 miles down the Noatak River to complete his journey, but winter set in early, and the river froze, and he ended up hiking into Kotzebue, frostbitten and near starvation, 10 months after leaving Fort McPherson. Nitre doesn't consider his trek a superhuman achievement. Rather, he says he tapped into a personal capacity everyone has, but few experience.
You ask yourself, how's my life going? And a lot of people realize they're not as good as they could be, you know? But rather than push through that, they, you know, turn on this TV or crank in the music or go to the bar or something, and they never push through that getting to really know themselves. And out there, you have no one else. You have nowhere else to go. You are stuck with yourself.
Nitre published the story of his trek in National Geographic magazine in April 1993. 35 years since he completed the trip, he's pleased that people are still interested. Limited to 6,000 words by National Geographic, he says, "There are a lot of stories I could never publish or tell." Reporting in Sitka with help from Aaron Fulton, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Former President Jimmy Carter's funeral was today. Carter left a historic mark on Alaska in 1980 by greatly expanding its national parks, refuges, and other conservation system units. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin spoke to two Anchorage men who say Carter made a big impression on them, too, when he visited Alaska 20 years later.
Ready, step. Ready, step.
It was a formal affair at the Capitol Tuesday night when military pallbearers inched Carter's flag-draped coffin into the Capitol Rotunda, one coordinated step at a time. Buzz Scher's experience with Carter was not the least bit formal.
The second we met him, he was just so, it's not really a good term, but down to earth, but he was. He was just so open, friendly.
Carter came to Alaska in 2000 to celebrate the anniversary of his landmark conservation law, and he wanted to go birding. Someone contacted Scher and Theed Tobish, two of Alaska's top birders, measured by the number of species they'd sighted. Their mission? Take the former president and his wife Rosalind Carter out birding in Anchorage over three mornings. They had some challenges. For one thing, it was August. Scher says that's not a great time to spot or hear birds in Anchorage.
You have to walk around. You're listening for chip notes, looking for something moving in the brush, and you're generally trying to be very, very quiet. But here's a man that we didn't want to be quiet with. We wanted to hear his story.
Tobish says Carter was willing to oblige.
I remember asking him, Mr. President, I know you don't drink alcohol because of your religious beliefs, but how did you deal with the Russians with your SALT II treaty meetings and their vodka? And he said, that's a great story.
Carter revealed to them that he had a special drinking glass made with a false bottom so that he didn't have to drink all the shots that were poured. The birders had three Secret Service agents trailing them. At one point, Tobish says Carter wanted to call the agents over so he could show them a pair of Pacific loons.
They're incredibly beautiful birds and breeding plumage.
The agents didn't notice Carter at first, so he shouted louder and waved his arms. That got the agents running at them. Too fast. Scher recalls putting his hands in the air to avoid a painful misunderstanding. Another challenge, Carter was just so friendly. Early one morning, Scher and Tobish took the Carters to Westchester Lagoon along one of the busiest bike trails in Anchorage. Scher remembers joggers would freeze in their tracks at the sight of the former leader of the free world.
That would be your natural reaction, just, what do I do now? There's the president. He wouldn't waste a millisecond, and he would just turn right towards them, walk up to them, put his hand out. Hi, Jimmy Carter. Nice to meet you. You know, how are you today?
It cut into Carter's birding opportunities. But Tobish says Carter got that for passersby, catching a sight of him was special, no less important than his sighting of birds.
He was so gracious and no ego at all that I could see. But respect for other people was so strong also. I mean, here was a guy that could maneuver between global decision making and talking to birders on this coastal trail. He made it seamless.
Tobish and Scher say they felt honored to spend part of 3 days with Jimmy Carter, even if the birding was less than spectacular. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, Shelby Herbert and Patrick Gilchrist in Fairbanks, Eric Stone in Juneau, Ava White in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Kodiak, and Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Support for Public Radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
true. You showed your tongue and it was forked in two. Your venom was lethal, I almost believed you. Yeah, you played on my every mistake. Waiting on me to break. Held me out of hope and I would drown. I could play, I was facing away.
Travel on a jet plane far away. I know this hotel feels familiar, but you ain't never been here before. Took a chance with those beginners, now you're ready for something more. Told you that he loved you but forgot, even said he'd be here but he's not. Yeah, you better strike it while the iron's hot. You can tell by the way that I walk and the way I talk. Oh, I got something waiting for you. Let me show you the good things. Let me show you the good things. I got something working for you. Let me show you the good things. Let me show you the good things. Who get in your mind like me? Who taking the time like me? Who show you the good? Show you all the good things, baby. I know the story seems peculiar, like it's too good to be true.
Too good to be true.
What a promise I'll deliver, yeah. Let me change your point of view. Told you that he loved you but forgot, even said he'd be here but he's not. Yeah, you better strike it while the iron's hot. You can tell by the way that I walk and the way I talk. Oh, I got something waiting for you. Let me show you the good things. Let me show you the good things. I got something working for you. Let me show you the good things. Let me show you the good things. Who get in your mind like me? Who taking the time like me? Who show you the good?
Baby. Baby, I don't feel so good. Six words you never understood. I'll never let you go. Five words you never say. I laugh alone like nothing's wrong. 4 days has never felt so long. If three's a crowd and two is us, one slipped away. I just wanna make you feel okay. But all you do is look the other way. I can't tell you how much I wish I didn't want to stay. I just kinda wish you were gay. Is there a reason we're not through? Is there a 12-step just for you? Our conversations all in blue. 11 haze, 10 fingers tearing out my hair. 9 times you never made it there. I ate alone at 7, you were 6 minutes away. How am I supposed to make you feel okay?
Dishes in the sink, leave the ice cubes in your drink. Just come on over. Leave your coat behind the door, leave your laundry on the floor. Just come on over. Torn up jeans, a pair of flip-flops on your feet. Just come on over. Don't
Don't slow down, don't stop for gas. Keep those four wheels spinning fast. Just come on over. I need you now. Baby, looking just like that. Don't pack a bag, don't make me wait. I wanna kiss that smile that's on your face. Oh, all I need is all your love. Baby, I can't get enough. I need you wrapped up in these arms. I want you just the way you are. So come on over.
Of the summer, I've been waiting patiently for a beautiful lover. He's not a cheater, a believer. He's a warm, warm-blooded achiever. It's a lonely night in my bed in the heat of the summer. It's so hot.